coaches. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, they can't hold a flame against you, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, ay. Blow the whistle, got the game, it ain't no issue, yeah. Blowing the whistle, I had enough with you, the championship, it is gone. Ain't listen to you, I can't give it to you, cause you don't know what I've been on. This is the Coaches Podcast, ripping up everything off that.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into the Fantasy Coaches Podcast. I am your host, as always, Coach Steve. Let me introduce who we have today. It's just going to be me and Coach John Seg. John, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much. Just another beautiful day closer to real NFL action. So it's palpable. I'm excited. This is sick.
Love it. You put your bourbon in your coffee?
I did put a little bourbon in my coffee today. Yeah, a little Jim Beam single barrel.
So. I love it. Yeah, we were talking before the show, and John's like, guys, let me show you a coffee real quick. I was like, well, I'm getting a tequila cranberry. So he's like, well, I'll put some bourbon in it. Then I was like, all right, let's do this today.
Yeah, let's go. So, we're talking tight ends. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Yes. So Coach Jibbs not with us today. He'll be back, though. Don't worry. I just need a day off here there. So, yes, like I said, John just said, we're doing our final of our tier previews tonight, and it's tight ends. Not the most exciting position, obviously, but they're very important if you don't hit the high ones, who to go after in those later rounds. So we're going to get into that. Of course, we do have some notes to talk about, some fantasy notes. So let's get into that. All right. So we do have a few things here to talk about here. This one happened overnight last night. It's actually bigger news than, you know, most people might think. Obviously, we don't really talk about offensive linemen that much in terms of their impact, but obviously we all know the offensive line has a major impact in fantasy. Tyron Smith, the Dallas Cowboys star left tackle, needs surgery on his hamstring and is likely out until at least December, which would put him out obviously the first three months of the season here now. Does this big injury, because we know he's been an amazing left tackle over his career here, does this hurt the value, John, overall for guys like Dak and Zeke right now?
I've always been a little scared of this Dallas offense this whole offseason, and this is just adding to my fears of, like, yes, if things start to fall apart, I could see the Dallas offense really struggle. And so, losing Tyron Smith sucks. Anytime your left side of your line is weak, it makes it hard for the passing game, the run game. I mean, look, it's not good to lose starters this close to the season, especially when they're going to be out for a significant amount of time. So it just puts a little bit more fear into drafting guys like Zeke and Dak and Tony Pollard and CeeDee Lamb. And, not enough fear that I won't do it, but definitely gives me a little bit more pause.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, to be honest. I mean, I feel like if you were, like, indecisive between who to take and you're choosing between one of these Cowboys or someone else, I probably completely at this point just choose the other person, because I know he's just, one person doesn't always impact the whole line, but it definitely makes a significant impact to this offensive line overall that wasn't very great to begin with. So now it goes from decent to not so great, at personal opinion. So hopefully he comes back and healthy, but definitely would have kind of avoid these players now a little bit more if you weren't already doing so. All right. Michael Gallup will not start the season on the pump. That's hopefully great news there for that. Ricky Seals-Jones season-ending toe injury here. Sterling Shepard activated off the pump list. Miles Gaskins, O.J. Howard, Doyle Williams could be cut candidates. A little bit of a surprise for definitely Williams. Gus Edwards lands on the pump, and he's going to be out the first four games of the season here now. Does this make Mike Davis actively draftable now?
I mean, I don't think so.
He's number two now on the depth chart.
I know. And I was all off season last year. I was saying, don't draft Mike Davis. He's not the type of guy that's going to really break out, really bust open for you, do any real damage on the ground. He's ho-hum. He'll get you, 30, 40 yards in a game, and you hope he falls in the end zone. So I'm just not that type of guy that at the end of my draft, I put those players on my bench. I'd rather stash, the Damian Pierces, the Isaiah Pachecos, the guys who could really pop versus the Mike Davis, who I know is steady, probably going to get some work, but is never really going to dominate. This just more, I think, speaks to J.K. Dobbins in that the health of J.K. Dobbins hopefully is that he's going to have plenty of run week one and forward. So, yeah, this more just stinks for Gus Edwards than it does for me pump up Mike Davis at all. I think, yeah, of course, you need to know the name if you're in a deep league, if you're in some crazy 16-team league or something like that. But in your standard redraft leagues and your standard 12-team leagues, I don't see there much being with Mike Davis that it's worth even rostering.
See, I feel differently about it,
Jeff. Okay.
Honestly, I feel a little different. I'm not saying take him anything higher than round 13, 14, mm-hmm. but there's a situation where we know J.K. Dobbins is coming back, but there's also a situation we don't know if Dobbins is actually really back yet. I mean, he's looking great and everything, but we still don't really know. So that could give an opportunity for Mike Davis to see early work this season here. And if you can get him in those later rounds, just as a, who knows what's going to happen. Maybe Gus Edwards doesn't come back after those 4 weeks. Maybe he takes longer. Maybe Dobbins doesn't come back and start off right, or they work him in slowly, which give Mike Davis some early on work. So if you're doing that zero, RB strategy work, I mean, Mike Davis might be a perfect 14, 15 round guy to get. That would give you steady production. It won't be upside production, but it might be a steady floor production, at least for the first half of the season, while maybe some of your bigger upside guys takes the second half of the season to really kick in. So I see there is some value there personally.
Yeah, I think there could be. It all is, like I said, it's all going to be whether he gets – he's the type of guy where he needs to get all of the work. So if J.K. Dobbins comes out and has announced that he's not ready week one and they say, look, Mike Davis is the guy, he's a starter for week one, then yes, you can certainly plug him in your lineup and he will get you a good amount of points and be fine. But it's just – to me, it's just a very expiring asset where I don't – it's not going to – he's not all of a sudden going to take over the job. The second J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards is back, Mike Davis is probably, on the bench, if not a cut candidate. You know, if everyone was healthy in Baltimore, I don't even think Mike Davis would make the team. So that's just kind of my opinion. That's my opinion on it. So it's just it's definitely necessity, and he could get work and get touches early on out of necessity. But I tend to go for the more athletic, explosive guys at the end of drafts.
Of course, and that's what you should look to do, is get those upside players late in draft, for sure. So I get that as well. So, all right, last piece of news of the night, guys. This came out earlier today. I don't know how much you want to put into it, but apparently Antonio Gibson is the primary return man, punt return, kick return, whatever it is. Does this, what are we supposed to take out of this? Like, I don't know. Like, is he a top 30 running back right now?
I don't know, man. This Antonio Gibson offseason has been crazy. So, look, usually what happens is, and we've seen it before with guys like Antonio Brown, sometimes a star, if a team needs a spark, they'll put a superstar back there to return punts or return kicks because they just need a little bit of life on their offense. So they'll do anything. I don't think this is that case with Antonio Gibson. I don't think they say to themselves, like, he's so electric, we have to have him return kicks. I think he's good at it and he likes to do it. So that they're going to feature him in the game. But what the fear that takes me aside is if he is doing kick returns, doing punt returns, then the offense comes on the field and he's gassed. It might be Brian Robinson on the first and second downs. And then all of a sudden it's like Antonio Gibson is, I don't know. It's going to be a weird committee that I think is going to be really tough to decipher for fantasy. So I think it's a good thing for the football team or the Commanders, but I don't know if it's a good thing for Antonio Gibson's fantasy stock. It just makes for a dicey situation.
I think if you want to talk about Antonio Gibson, you literally need to do your draft the night before football starts. I need to see the depth chart. I need to see who's on the team come week one. I need to hear from Ron Rivera who's the starting running back is come week one, because that's what's really going to do it for me at the end of the day, because I just have no idea at this point. I have him at RB24 currently right now in my rankings, but I want to drop him lower than that now, because I think at this point, I'd rather just stay away from that situation. Let someone else believe they're getting a solid deal, whatever place he goes in the draft, probably round 6 or 7 now, and is let them deal with the headaches, because even if he is still maybe the top running back, I don't know. Brian Robinson's going to get worked in. JD McKissick is going to get worked in here. It's not like he's going to see over, you know, 250 touches in this offense this coming season. I don't think that's what he's going to do. So if you can wait until you can do your draft the latest possible, if you want to get Antonio Gibson shares, if not, let's let someone else deal with the headache. Don't deal with it. Even if it's a value, honestly, I think at this point, just don't even deal with it.
Yep. I actually am starting to agree, which stinks because Antonio Gibson in a vacuum, the talent of Antonio Gibson is a great talent. It's just, I think the situation is going to be really crappy for fantasy.
Oh, he's been so good over the last few seasons too. You know, it's so strange outside of the fumbling issues. It's so strange, but we will have to wait and see, guys. So, all right, let's get over to our main topic of the night, guys. And it's obviously our tight end tiers. And obviously I have my six or seven tiers, whatever I put it in here now. Again, the ones we're going to talk about are probably in the top three or four tiers at most, but we have to go through everything just so people know different players depending on how you like the draft. So, of course, let's start at the top. Tier one, the God Elites. It's basically just Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce. Literally, I think the only two guys who will actually finish tight end one again is between one of these two guys here this coming season here. Early on question, John, obviously, is there someone that shouldn't, that should be in this tier maybe, or is there someone that one of these guys shouldn't be here?
No, I think this is probably how I would break it down too. These two are, and they're one, two, however you want to break it down. If you're in any level of a keeper or dynasty format, it's probably Mark Andrews. If you're in any form of a true redraft, it's probably Travis Kelce. But whoever you want to be your tight end one out of these two is superstar. Great. Probably number one target on their offense and going to lead the tight end world in receptions and yardage. So. Yeah, I like both guys. I personally have Mark Andrews, but I've been warming on the idea of Travis Kelce really having a lot of life here for this last season.
All right, next question here, start us off here. How early are you taking either one of these guys this coming redraft season?
Yeah, I've always been in the camp that, you know, back of the first, if you really wanted to, the positional advantage is there if you're in, you know, pick 10, 11, 12. But now I think that you can kind of, it's funny, you don't have to take them that early. I think there are enough of these, and we'll get to the next tier of tight ends, but there's enough of these really good tight ends that you don't have to take Travis Kelce in the back of the first anymore. You can wait and get Kittle in the fourth or third or Pitts or Waller, some of these other guys. So if you wanted to, I think you're going to have to do it in the back of the first, but beginning of the second, kind of in that range for either one of these guys.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I'm okay taking Travis Kelce at the end of round one, depending on how the draft board is looking. Obviously, it seems like Mark Andrews kind of goes in the middle of round two, and depending on how I do early on, if I get like a, you know, if I get a really strong player I like in round one, I wouldn't mind going Mark Andrews in round two. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I'd love to get Andrews in three and Kelce in two somehow, but the highest I'd probably take is Travis Kelce early round one, Mark Andrews mid round two. That'd be my highest point for either one of them to go. So,
yeah, I found myself in a lot of super flex drafts taking Lamar Jackson round one and trying to get Mark Andrews round two. That's kind of been my, so I can lock up the two onesie positions and you know, and then my work on the rest. So.
Right.
It's kind of nice. It's a fun way to start a draft when you have that stack.
Oh, it sure is. And some people say, well, should I double stack these guys? I mean, you could, but I did that last year and I thought it was a game winner. And then I realized that Darren Waller doesn't play half the season. And then, you know, you're better off just grabbing one and then going after another strong position somewhere else. Honestly, that's the way I see it. But you could go grab both these guys very early. You have like an eighth pick, I think you could get both these guys at the eighth or ninth pick and then scoop around, or anything after eight, you could scoop around and double back on them. But I really wouldn't recommend doing that personally, no matter if it's tight end premium.
You'd just be so weak at all your other positions that you lose the positional advantage because now everyone else has the advantage over you at running back and wide receiver. The idea is you have the positional advantage at tight end, but you can also keep pace with everyone else at tight end, at running back and wide receiver.
Right, exactly. So, all right, let's get over to tier number two. And it's called the tight end elites. Not gods, but they're elites still. The best chance to give the top five upside here, Kyle Pitts, George Kittle, Darren Waller, and Dalton Schultz. So early on, who belongs and who might not belong in this tier? Who should be or should not be?
I think actually all these guys belong. It's funny. Dalton Schultz is the one that people will probably say shouldn't belong, but he does. He really does. I mean, he finishes tight end three. He's probably going to be the number two target in that offense. You know, I could see him getting 100+ targets. So yeah, there's a case to be made that he should be in this tier. He's not as game breaking as the other three, but he could still volume his way to a really good season, a really good season.
Right, and that actually leads into my first question for this grouping here. You're buying into the rise of Dalton Schultz this coming season.
Obviously. I am. I wasn't early on, but because I just thought that Dallas would do something with the, and when I say early on, I mean very early on, like end of last season. Right. I figured Dallas would do something with their offense. They'd change some things around, and it wouldn't be so Dalton Schultz-centric, but they did the complete opposite. They traded away Amari Cooper, and it became very Dalton Schultz necessary. So I think, yeah, I'm buying into it as we get closer to the season. I think, you know, camp hype is good. He's going to see a lot of targets, and there's no one really there that they're deprived of playmakers. So they need playmakers.
Right. And if you look at all these positions here, I mean, you know, I think Dalton Schultz is just going to see volume in this offense here. There isn't a really another option. Again, Kyle Pitts is his own number one option overall, but again, he's in a bad offense. But the rest of the three here are in, you know, relatively good offenses, but George Kittle has two other pretty strong wide receivers. So does Darren Waller. Dalton Schultz don't really have that. Michael Gallup's coming back, but he's coming off an injury right now. Who knows how that's going to go? You know, we all love Jalen Tolbert, but yeah, he's a rookie still, so we don't really know how he'll perform at the next level. But Dalton Schultz, I mean, John, like you said it, I mean, 110, 120 targets, very possible in this kind of offense. Dak has always loved his tight ends over his career, making you know, Jason Witten, you know, good at the older age that he was. And then obviously the last few seasons now, Dalton Schultz has really played well for us in fantasy. And I think just overall, the volume alone makes Dalton Schultz a nice grab in that round 6-7 range where you can grab your tight end and be pretty happy that you should get pretty solid production out of him the entire series. So
mm-hmm. My question to you, someone posed this to me and I thought it was an interesting question. If Kyle Pitts all of a sudden loses his tight end eligibility and becomes just a wide receiver, say that in this crazy world, that's what happens. Would we be talking about him as high as we do? Or is it because he is such an advantage at the tight end slot that we talk about him the way that we do?
Oof, that is a tough question, honestly.
Right? Like I was like, oh, yeah, that is it. He goes, if you had to put him in your wide receiver rankings, where would he rank in your wide receivers? And I'm like, that's a great question. That's a great question. And I just thought, we don't have to answer it now, but it's definitely something to sort of stew on because he's taken a lot of snaps from the outside. He's taken as many snaps from the outside as he is inline blocking. I mean, if not 10 times more. So it's interesting. It's very interesting.
If I'm looking at Kyle Pitts and his ability overall, the mismatch that he presents, where he, depending on where he gets lined up at, I mean, I would be comfortable putting him in that 13 to 18 range. And that has Michael Pittman in my books and in my rankings, Michael Pittman, DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, Terry McLaurin, Jalen Waddle, Cortland Sutton. I'd be okay in that range there because of what he's able to do as a mismatch based on where he lines up on the offense. Yes, he lands up outside a lot more often, but you know, he's a big, fast, you know, pass catcher. So, I mean, I'd be okay. He definitely drops in terms of his ranking, but as he's a tight end, he's just a dangerous mismatch. That's why he's number three. But in a normal, you know, if you put him as a wide receiver, he fits in that middle tier wide receivers of a high-end wide receiver too, personally.
Yeah. No, I agree. I just thought it was cool. Because
that is interesting, yeah.
It was interesting. At some point, if he keeps doing what he's doing, there will be the conversation of does he get wide receiver eligibility and tight end eligibility? And then the question does, you know, do we eventually just drop the tight end eligibility because he's just so ridiculous and they play him out wide all the time and he's basically a wide receiver?
That would be terrible for a lot of that's for sure. I know I'm trying to trade for him right now and I'd be upset if that was the case.
Fantasy Twitter would lose their minds.
Oh, they would absolutely lose their minds. All right, let's do one more question in this tier here. Can George Kittle stay elite with Trey Lance? Do you believe George Kittle can continually be that top tier tight end, even with Trey Lance's ability right now?
I do. I think there actually might be some more big play upside with Trey Lance because Trey Lance can uncork a ball that Jimmy Garoppolo could never do. You know, George Kittle has always kind of been a yak guy, been kind of a you know, muscle you off the off of him type of person, but he can stretch a field. He certainly has some speed to his game and can get some separation. So I think that George Kittle, though it might not be as volume dependent, as volume heavy, because they won't lean on him. You know, he might not see the 10 to 15 targets games like he used to, but he could have a couple big plays because of just, you have to fear the arm of Jamar Chase for some reason. You have to fear the arm of Trey Lance. And so, you know, it'll leave things kind of intermediate, middle of the field open because safeties are sucked back, DBs are sucked back, and George Kittle can just kind of operate in that space. So it'll be interesting. I think he's I really like George Kittle to have a little post hype, because I think people were kind of let down last year after George Kittle. I think this is going to, as much of a post hype sleeper as George Kittle is, I think this is kind of his season. I like him a lot with Trey Lance, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I respect that for sure. I mean, I like him. I don't know if he's going to be that. I think people have always been wanting George Kittle to get back to that one season where he put up 1,400 yards, and everyone is looking for him to get back there, and he just hasn't done it over his years. And, you know, the way I see it is that he's going to get hurt and probably miss a few games here and there. He hasn't played a full season since 2018. That's a long time ago. I think you're looking at the way – I think you kind of said it best. I think he's going to see more downfield targets, more, you know, yards. You know, his yards are going to look better, but I don't know if he's going to get as many receptions and possibly touchdowns, because yes, he's a great guy to have in the red zone there, but Trey Lance can run the ball. You don't need to throw the ball to, you know, George Kittle when they get to that red zone there. Jimmy G had to. He had to look for George Kittle pretty often. I don't think you're getting that the same thing. So I think the yardage could be there. The touchdowns and the receptions I'm slightly concerned about, but I mean, he's still a pretty good tight end to that here. I think he's going later than most people think. He's going in that, like, round 5-6 range still. So yeah. You could get him pretty easily if you wanted to have an elite tight end like George Kittle. So
yeah, when we were talking last tier about drafting, right, George Kittle was the exact name that was in my mind. Where in my mind, I'm like, I'd rather George Kittle in the fifth than Travis Kelce in the back of the first. In my mind. That's just because, you know, Travis Kelce is probably odds on to have a better season than George Kittle, but how much better? You know, 200-300 yards better and a couple touchdowns better. So is that worth 6 rounds, 5 rounds to me? Probably not. I'd rather George Kittle. So, yeah, he's going as a weird value right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, he definitely is. And then I really want to see George Kittle get back to his glory of his old days, so we'll see how that goes.
That'd be nice.
All right, let's head over to tight end tier 3 here, and this is the rest of the tight end ones, in my opinion. I guess the top 10, you could say whatever, depending on how I did this. But this tier has T.J. Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, and Zach Ertz. Mid-range tight end ones, likely to finish the tight end one pretty easily, but might not have that elite ceiling on their game there. Is there someone that should be in this tier, should not be in this tier?
No, this is an interesting little tier. I think I like all of these guys. It's funny, two out of the three could break out, and one is just super necessary because of the first 6 weeks. So they both, all three will see probably similar volume, but for different reasons. Yeah, I think the only other name I might want to bring up in this tier would probably be, no, that's still not there yet. No, this is a good one. I don't disagree with this. This is the back end tight end one. This is a good tier.
Because watch, when you get to the next tier, and when I was doing this, I was like, oof, I don't know. Nah, I don't know.
It's funny how tight end just goes off a cliff like that.
This is probably like the turning of the cliff right now, and it's like you're hanging on by a thread. This is the thread right here, and then yeah. It's just like, oh wow, I don't know what to do with these guys because there's so much variance. There's a lot of people in the next tier, but no, yeah. I agree with you. This is a solid tier here overall. I guess the only real question is here. I mean, the two guys who have dealt with some newcomers and T.J. Hockenson, obviously with Jameson Williams, but he might not be involved obviously the first few months. Obviously, T.J. Shark. DeAndre Swift's coming back for a full season. And then the other side, you have Dallas Goedert, who's going to have A.J. Brown now on the team here. You know, who do you believe might get hurt the most with their new additions, Dallas Goedert or T.J. Hockenson?
I think it's probably Dallas Goedert because I think you're going to have year two of Devonta Smith. You're going to have A.J. Brown coming into town. You're going to have Jalen Hurts running the ball in the red zone. You're in a run first team as it is. There's not a ton of passing to go around. So to me, I think A.J. Brown coming in and being an alpha and demanding that target share is going to hurt Dallas Goedert more than Jameson Williams. Doesn't scare me, you know, because he's not going to be ready to go right out the gates. DJ Chark is who he is. He's a deep threat. He's not a, you know, volume type receiver. TJ Hockenson could be the sort of safety valve, the outlet for Jared Goff. He could see a lot of this, you know, when the play starts to break down, it's going to be dump offs to Swift or in, you know, short intermediate to TJ Hockenson. So I actually like Hawk. Not as much as obviously the last tier. I don't know if he can break into this elite level, but you know, if you kind of kick tight end down the can a little, in your draft and you have, and you're stuck with TJ Hockenson, I think you're in a good place. There's worse, you know, he could have some decent weeks for you, but I see him finishing in that tight end, like six, if everything goes well, he's tight end six or seven, or floor is like tight end 13. So, you know, I like Hawk.
Yeah, see, I'm glad it's just you and me today because we're having a lot of differences. Because I would prefer Dallas Goedert still in this video, honestly. And the way I see it is like, yeah, AJ Brown's going to command targets there, but AJ Brown's going to also command a lot of defenses. We also have Devontae Smith on the field. I feel like Dallas Goedert has an opportunity to see a lot more one-on-one coverages, especially over the middle of the field here. And Jalen Hurts loves the third. You got Dallas Goedert. He was on pace for a great season. He almost had a career highs last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would expect him not to break those career highs, but to be in a really good place all season long here. While TJ Hockenson, I don't know if I feel the same way. I don't know if the defenses are going to go focus on someone else. I mean, yeah, DJ Shark's there now, obviously, and Amon-Ra St. Brown has gotten better, so defense is going to have to focus on them. But I don't know if there's much of a difference between this year and last year with with TJ Hockenson's surroundings, where he's not going to be focused on this offense still. So I don't know. I feel like Shark's going to see his targets. I feel like Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to be more dangerous the entire season than he is at the end of last year when they were all gone. And then obviously DeAndre Swift's going to just eat up targets on the underneath route. So
the one thing I will say to your Dallas Goedert point is I think the offense is a lot better in Philadelphia. So, you know, there will be more scoring opportunities. There will be more offensive possessions. There will be more everything, time of possession, all that. And so it just gives you more opportunity at fantasy points, where I think the Lions will kind of, their offense is going to be a bottom 10 offense. So it's not going to be, there is a path for Dallas Goedert to have a really big season. I don't think there's a path for TJ Hockenson to have a really big season. So that's the one thing you're probably right there with Dallas Goedert.
Right. All right. Well, like I said, This is a solid tier, guys. So you should be pretty happy getting these guys probably in that 8 to 10 range. Probably Hockenson goes at least round eight. If I feel like he goes six or seven, maybe, but at least Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz will be in that 8, 9, 10 range if you want to get that tight end at that point. The next round gets a little crazy here now, guys. Tier four, borderline tight end ones: Mike Gesicki, Pat Freiermuth, Dawson Knox, Cole Kmet, Irv Smith, Albert O, guys with a wide range of outcomes, but has the upside to finish tight end as a tight end one. Is there someone that should not be in this tier or should be in this tier that I'm missing?
No, I think everyone that's in this tier fits that description. The only name I might bring up would be Noah Fant. I think Noah Fant in Seattle is an interesting one. I know the quarterback situation sucks, and it's – you know, you don't really want to dive into that Seattle offense and get a piece of it, but there is a world where, you know, Noah Fant is necessary and sees targets and gets touchdowns, because that's just, you know, he's the only show in town at tight end, in my opinion.
I respect that one. He's in, I think, the next tier for sure.
Yeah.
He's definitely in the next tier, but yeah, this is definitely an interesting tier overall. So, like, who's more likely to bomb? Like, and I mean bomb, I mean not in a good way, and a bomb in a bad way here. Mike Gesicki, Dawson Knox, or Pat Freiermuth? All guys who have been pretty good overall, but their situations have changed slightly. You know, obviously Gabriel Davis and, you know, some other players have stepped up. Dawson Knox might not be as relevant with those tied touchdowns last year. Pat Freiermuth, same thing. Downgrading quarterback with very touchdown dependent. Mike Gesicki, tons of targets, but obviously now you have Tyreek Hill and the better run game and Cedric Wilson there now. Who's most likely to bomb out of those top three?
To me, it seems like Mike Gesicki because, I mean, the reports lately have been that they're looking to trade him. They're talking about moving him, and the team isn't sold on Mike Gesicki. They don't need him in this offense. And if he was a necessary piece, whether he's 60 targets, 80 targets, 100 targets, if McDaniel thought he was a necessary piece, he wouldn't be floating him out in trades. And so Mike Gesicki doesn't want to block. Mike Gesicki doesn't want to do – that's not the type of player he is, and that's what they're asking him to do. So if you were to tell me who is one player where the wheels could really fall off the bus and they're borderline droppable, it's Mike Gesicki. I think, you know, the targets will go everywhere else. You know, he's probably third or fourth in the pecking order for targets, and they're not even asking him to run many routes. So it just doesn't seem like things are going well for him. Now, he could get traded, and the team that he gets traded to turns him into a superstar. So I think he is athletic enough to do it. But I'd feel much more comfortable with Dawson Knox being on that potent offense and touchdown upside, and Pat Freiermuth being, you know, a pretty solid target. And I think the news is getting better about Kenny Pickett. He might actually be a legit quarterback, which is crazy. So I would take my shot with those other two and say that Mike Gesicki would bust out of those ones.
Yeah, I honestly hate to say it, but I agree with you, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Dawson Knox, I think all three of these guys takes a step down from what you saw last year, just in a general sense here. Mm-hmm. Knox should still be very much involved. Pat Freiermuth, actually, I like the best, I think, at this point now, because I think he will be involved in this offense more likely than not, even with the many targets surrounding him. But Mike Gesicki just doesn't fit what the Dolphins want him to do, like you mentioned. I mean, the blocking is very important to Mike McDaniel, and Mike Gesicki is just not an inline blocking tight end. And that's a real struggle. I mean, you see him play a lot in this preseason because he needed to learn the offense and get more involved in understanding of how it runs. And Mike Gesicki's always been a guy who stepped up because he saw an increase in opportunity. And my only concern is he going to see that opportunity still? I mean, obviously, yeah, having like guys like Hill and Waddle being, you know, heavily covered probably in many games might open the field up. But again, where is he going to line up on the inside? Because he's usually not good when he lines up on the inside. And you already have Cedric Wilson being in the slot, which Mike Gesicki was one of the highest slot tight ends last year. So it just really depends on how he's viewed in that offense, but it's not looking great. The reports are not great with Mike Gesicki in this offense. So probably would say, as long as he doesn't get traded, probably not a great season for Mike Gesicki, and he's going to go in the offseason looking for a new team, unfortunately, because I do like him. He's a Jersey guy, but just doesn't fit what Miami wants to do.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It's very upsetting. But on to the next question here. All right, now this talks about the other half of this tier here, the Cole Kmet, Irv Smith, Albert O. Who's most likely to break out this year? I think that's my question. Yes.
So when I look for tight ends to break out, I look for where are they in the pecking order of the passing game, because that's where the volume will come from. Cole Kmet looks like he's going to be the number two, in that offense. And now the offense isn't going to be great, but they're going to have a lot of garbage time. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot at the end of games. I think the Bears are going to be down a lot. So Cole Kmet could see 100+ targets. Now they're not going to be super valuable high end touchdowns. They're not going to be these big, huge plays. It's just going to be targets. And so I would take that over Irv Smith, who I think is athletic and has touchdown upside. But he's behind Justin Jefferson. He's behind KJ Osborne. He's behind Adam Thielen. And so Albert O is another one. He's behind, you know, KJ Hamler. He's behind Sutton. He's behind Jerry Jeudy. So it's just the path to targets for Cole Kmet is really there, and you can see it clear as day. So to me, if there was going to be a breakout, it's Cole Kmet.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Honestly, it's all about opportunity when it comes to tight ends at this point. I mentioned it before about Mike Gesicki and his opportunities. Irv Smith could be 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5. Albert O could be 3, 4, or 5. Cole Kmet's likely number two no matter what. And this is an offense that's going to need to pass the ball more times than not. And he, if he had caught like four or five touchdowns last year, he probably would have been like tight end eight last year.
Oh yeah, he was tight end 13 with zero touchdowns. That's exactly. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
And Jimmy Graham's finally gone off this team here now. The red zone targets, he had even led the league in red zone targets. So he was in the top five or top 10 mm-hmm. in red zone targets. He just didn't get his opportunity, unfortunately, last year. Expect that to change this year. Cole Kmet should be a great tight end. You get in that round 11 or 12 range that if you skip tight end, you should be pretty happy getting Cole Kmet or even honestly any one of these guys at this point in that range there. So I love a good Cole Kmet play right now.
Mm.
All right, let's go over to the final tier of the night, the tier five. This is the tight end two area, but maybe there's some surprising here. This tier includes Evan Engram, Robert Tonyan, the Bucks tight ends, David Njoku, Hunter Henry, Hayden Hurst, Noah Fant in this tier, Austin Hooper, Tyler Higbee, and Jonnu Smith. So out of this tier, give me three names that these all guys are drafting. If you're literally going late round tight end, give me mm-hmm. three guys you're willing to draft if you choose to just bomb the position in total.
Oh boy. Probably Noah Fant, probably David Njoku, and then Hunter Henry has the touchdown upside. He showed some connection with Mac. I mean, he's due for regression, but at this point, I'll take a guy who has some prowess in the red zone and always has his whole career, even when he was in the Chargers. He was just a touchdown kind of guy. So I guess I'll take Hunter Henry.
Okay. I like it. I think I would go David Njoku, Hunter Henry. I'd go Austin Hooper,
yeah.
Personally.
I was like debating Austin between
this year.
Hooper
is a nice sleeper this year. I do enjoy him a lot. Is there anyone else in this tier you kind of like, or is that they're all kind of mm. forehead at this point?
I mean, the Bucks tight end, it's funny that you just put Bucks tight end because
I don't know who it's going
to
be.
I don't know who it's going to be, but I think it is going to be relevant. I think it's probably going to be Cameron Brate to start the season. Cade Otton is doing well, but, you know, there's Kyle Rudolph there now too?
He's there, but so, I don't know if he's on the last, to be honest.
He might not. So, but it's funny you say the Bucks tight end. That's the only other one that I think could – really surprise us. The problem is we just don't know who it's going to be yet and when that transition to the rookie is going to be. But there is any time you can get a tight end for Tom Brady, it's probably a good idea.
Right, definitely. I mean, Evan Engram kind of has me like, I kind of want to see what's there in Jacksonville. You know, Trevor Lawrence threw to his tight ends relatively often last year. I'd love to see if maybe there's something there with him. He looked good in that one preseason game. With Trevor Lawrence, I think, last week. But, yeah, I mean, this tier is tough, guys. It's literally if you want one of these guys, these are the upside guys. They might have some upside to them. They might not. But this is – if you're bombing tight end, this is what is left.
Mm.
This is what yeah. you're going to grab for, so –
Which is why you should grab George Kittle in the fifth and not worry about this tier and not have to deal with this.
Or Dallas Goedert in the eighth
and not have to deal with this. Because I'll tell you, rolling out Evan Engram sounds fun in theory, but when he gets a ball off of his hands and all of a sudden he's benched for three plays or three drives, you're like, oh, great, this sucks.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's definitely not a great tier, but this again, guys, this is what you're getting with this tier here at this point. Mm-hmm. You're getting guys who have some upside play at times, but likely will disappoint you more weeks than not, and mm-hmm. will probably be a streaming position at this point. You're going to be probably having a bunch of these guys on and off your team throughout the whole offseason, the whole season. So,
yeah. I call these the DFS tight ends. These are good DFS tight ends where if you don't want to pay up and pay the premium, you plug in one of these guys and hope they get a touchdown. But I'm not in season long. I kind of stay away from this tier of like ambiguous garbage.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Is there anyone else worth mentioning?
I just called that tier ambiguous garbage, so I don't think there's anyone else worth mentioning.
There's something below ambiguous garbage.
Yeah. No, I just dunked on that whole tier, so I don't think there's anyone else I wanna bring up.
Yeah, no, that's it, guys. Like I said, this was gonna be a shorter episode because literally it's the first half of tight ends, and then after that it's just choose your maker at that point and see what you want to do with it. So
yeah, choose whoever you want. You're probably going to drop them by week 3. So, you know, and probably find someone else. or package them up and trade for somebody else and do it that way. But that last tier, I know it's always, you know, it's, you think to yourself, oh, it's tight end. It's just one position. I can find value late in draft. And it's like, it's really hard to do. It's really difficult. I'm in the camp where I would rather lock up my tight end in the beginning first 10 rounds and have someone of substance.
Right. And then the way I see it is like, I'd want to take honestly the Kelce or Andrews early, or I'm waiting until round 8 or 9 or 10 to grab one of the round 3 or 4 tier, not 3 or 4 round, but the third or tier 3 or 4 in that round 8, 9 or 10 at that point. That's the way I want to go tight end this year. So
sure. Yeah. If you don't get one of the top three, you can go for a Cole Kmet type of guy. I don't mind that strategy either. That's totally fine. It's just when people really punt the position and start taking 2 or 3 tight ends with the last 3 picks of their draft, and they're like, maybe one of these guys will emerge. I'm like, it just doesn't seem to work out. It just never does. You know, when, and then you're, to me, you're clogging up your roster, the back of your bench with 2 tight ends or 3 tight ends that you're going to end up dropping anyway. So
yeah,
it's just, you know, I value the tight end position a lot in fantasy.
Yeah, I can agree with that, Coach John. Honestly, it's just tough out there for tight ends, honest.
Yeah, if you can get a guy that you can just plug in your lineup and not worry about that for the rest of the season, you don't have to waste your waiver wire priority. You don't have to waste your fab. You don't have to do all, you don't have to play the game of like, do I start him this week or next week? And then the week where you don't start him, he gets the touchdown, and then you plug Hunter Henry in, and then he goes 1 for 18, and you're like, oh, great. Well, this sucks. And so, you know, it's like, fantasy is hard enough as it is. I want to take the question marks out of fantasy. And so if I can just put Dallas Goedert in my lineup and say to myself, nope, I'm going to live and die with Dallas Goedert. I'm not going to worry about it. It is what it is. And hopefully he has a big game. And when he does, that's when I win my week. That to me is how I play tight end.
Yeah, that is the best way to describe it, honestly, guys. But I said, take your tight ends with a grain of salt. Either go early, go semi-late. No, go late, go semi-late. That's the way I see it at this point. So that is going to wrap up our tight end tiers tonight, guys. Like I said, it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode, but that's what the tight end position does to you. It's very minimal of what is actually out there for you guys to use. So we're going to wrap things up tonight. John, is there anything you want to mention before we sign off for the night?
No, we got some preseason football tonight. We're going to see some first team offenses, so that'll be exciting.
Yes.
No, I got nothing. I'm just gassed up for the season. It's like, this is the time of year where it's like, it's so close, but yet still feels so far away.
Yes, it's true. And I still have, 5 more leagues of draft my redraft season. So I'm excited. These are my home leagues. These are the ones I've had forever. Yeah. Not the dynasty leagues that I'm all over the place with now, but these are regular redraft leagues. So I'm excited to get back to some old school fantasy. Like I said, guys, we appreciate you guys for listening in. As always, please go check out our website, www.thefantasycoaches.com. We got our articles up there. We got, you know, the dynasty coaches are up there. We got us up there. We have rankings up there. We have my insider playbook up there. So go check that out. As always, follow us on Twitter at Coaches Fantasy. Check up for updates. We'll be back next Monday and Thursday, our last 2 shows before we get into actual season talk. So don't want to miss those. If you're drafting next week or mid next week, you definitely want to watch those shows. So they're going to be really helpful for help you guys get the best values. Give them a little hint of how the redraft season should go. So until next time, guys, thanks for listening and have a great one.
The bag is not far-fetched. We got a couple of Clark Kents. I've been feeling super duper. How the heck they know the future? Come with me, don't be a loser. Grass is green like Koopa Scoopers. Clueless analysts don't do the half of this. In fact, I'm backing this by asking if y'all remember that tough act into acting. Shh, like boom, running like zoom. The highest and mightiest entered the room. High off the knowledge, I'm feeling the fumes. All players cover this, nuts as legumes. Opponents are doomed, and these are the facts. I keep it 100 like I'm running track. I listen up, Jack, I'ma head back to the blowin' that, blowin' that, blowin' that, go.